what happens to the individual's thought process when exposed to the kind of turbulence and that Alice describes for us that happens to the 2 and 3 year old when they are not respected and when violence is imposed on them, violence and coercion in general, that they may have a deeper understanding of the mutilation in a moral sense, the mutilation of the human underclass than Popper. What I'm thinking of, as I suggested just now, as I just said, is Popper's reluctant application of the appellation benevolent to Plato. And here's the excerpt that I'm talking about from Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies. Quote, in view of all this, and by all this, he's referring to his demonstration that Plato's definitions of justice and happiness are, in fact, totalitarian, that only the state matters. What creates a stronger state, etc. We discussed this. In view of all this, it seems to be a consistent and hardly refutable interpretation of the material, says Karl Popper, to present Plato as a totalitarian party politician, unsuccessful in his immediate and practical undertakings, but in the long run, only too successful in his propaganda for the arrest and overthrow of a civilization which he hated. And he's referring to the one Socrates and many others who were attempting to form an anti-slavery movement. But Popper is particularly thinking of just the democracy itself, which did not include, or would have perhaps led to, but it did not include the anti-slavery agenda. The civilization he hated, continuing with Popper, but one only has to put the matter in this blunt fashion in order to feel that there's something seriously amiss with this interpretation. I therefore began to search for evidence which would refute this interpretation of Plato's totalitarianism. The new material made the identity between Platonism and totalitarianism only the more manifest. The one point in which I felt that my search for a refutation had succeeded concerned Plato's hatred of tyranny. Of course, there was always the possibility of explaining this away. It would have been easy to say that his indictment of tyranny was mere propaganda. Totalitarianism often professes a love of quote-unquote true freedom, and Plato's praise of freedom as opposed to tyranny sounds exactly like this professed love. But I felt that this did not remove the need for modifying my interpretation. A new picture was needed, which would have to include Plato's sincere belief in his mission as healer of the sick social body, as well as the fact that he had seen more clearly than anybody else before or after him what was happening to Greek society. Since the attempt to reject the identity of Platonism and totalitarianism had not improved the picture, I was ultimately forced to modify my interpretation of totalitarianism itself. In other words, my attempt to understand Plato by analogy with modern totalitarianism led me, to my own surprise, to modify my view of totalitarianism. It did not modify my hostility, but it ultimately led me to see that the strength of both the old and the new totalitarian movements rested on the fact that they attempted to answer a very real need, however badly conceived this attempt may have been. And I find myself thinking of that little 2-year-old or 3-year-old pondering what to do what to do about the violence and the anger and the constant hurting of one another that he or she saw happening when born into it. Continuing with Popper, in the light of my new interpretation, it appears to me that Plato's declaration of his wish to make the state and its citizens happy is not merely propaganda. I'm ready to grant his fundamental benevolence. And I include here a definition of benevolent as well-meaning and kindly, from the Latin bene, maybe, ben, which means well, and vel, which means to wish. And I'm arguing that that's a subjective judgment, and that kindly might be stretched to fit in its old usage of courteous. But I don't accept this word appended or as a description of Plato. Popper has appended a note, which was at the back of the book, to his formulation, this formulation, his reasoning about Plato's genuineness in wanting his society to be happy, in which he writes, Karl Popper does, in my story, there should be no villains. Crime is not interesting. It's what men do at their best with good intentions that really concerns us. And that is a quote that he is sharing from George Bernard Shaw's preface to St. Joan. And he says, I've tried, as Karl Popper says, I've tried as far as possible to apply this methodological principle to my interpretation of Plato. And he writes that this quote from George Bernard Shaw, in my story, there should be no villains. Crime is not interesting. It's what men do at their best with good intentions that really concerns us, unquote. From the preface to St. Joan is one of the first sentences in the section, tragedy, not melodrama. And that's unquote from Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies. With Alice's elucidation of the psychological dynamics at work kept in view, we can see that what he terms Shaw's method reads very like the psychological dynamics that Alice warns us are a soul trap in which the child tries to understand the parent. To want one's parent to be happy is not benevolence. It may well be, in fact, and I believe is, the root of the malaise of class and all the twisted horrors it bore. But as Prince is demonstrating, as Prince and his rainbow children are demonstrating and will demonstrate, it can also be the source of the solution to ending class. And I want to be, and I hope we can think more about this. I haven't yet had a chance. Is this a third possible path in our response to class when we're two or three? Does it explain how prophets came among us? To want one's parent to be happy, perhaps, can also be the source of the solution to ending class. It may be so on a deep, if not deepest, level. Let's think about it.